The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my lower right, it's Professor James Balfour Tubbs.
Hello, hello. How are you?
How are you doing, Jim? You had a successful day, we heard earlier.
Yes, very successful day, and this having the sun out is wonderful.
Yes, it is. I'm wondering, you don't have any in-person classes right now, right, Jim?
No in-person. In fact, you know, it's kind of depressing. I mean, I've got some good students, but I wouldn't recognize them if I saw them on the street.
It's true. All I can tell you all, though, is I might be one of the only people here teaching one section of an in-person organic chemistry lab. And 5 weeks ago, I had one student who couldn't make lab. 4 weeks ago, 2, 3 weeks ago, 5, and by next week, half of my lab cannot come to class.
Ooh. Oh, no.
Yep. And we're trying to wrap the big project up, which, by the way, is super annoying.
And so what's the reason for them not showing up?
The only reason that there could be, they're testing positive for COVID-19.
Oh. I had a student tell me that they had tested positive.
Right. Well, the one was very sheepish, and I will not say his or her name here, obviously, but I had to go. You don't understand, Prof. Mayo. I had to go to my boyfriend's grandmother's funeral. I had to. And I'm like, sure, I understand your want to go to the funeral. Why did you go to that funeral? Yeah, it's complicated. It's complicated. Someone who is not complicated at all is Professor Mara Livesey. She's extremely simple in the best possible way.
Thank you. I was worried you were going to call me simple-minded.
Although I did mess up, I was going to call everybody, including their middle names today. We'll find out yours later on.
It's a mystery for now. I can be mysterious for once in my life.
Yeah, I you know, I'm just trying to use words to have fun.
I like to use words to have fun. This morning I had a problem set and I told my students, you guys are going to have so much fun. And into the chat, one of my students says, you're playing real fast and loose with the word fun today.
And rightfully so.
Wow.
Professor Dave Chow, actually, now that I think about it, I don't know if I know your middle name.
I'll keep you guessing for now. Yeah, just like Mara, okay?
Oh, man. Cosmo? Is it
Cosmo? No, it's Mealworm, okay? It's Mealworm. Yeah, I wish. I wish I had a cool middle name like that. Or Anthrax or something just kind of with a little edge to it, you know?
We saw your Super Bowl Hungry Howie's commercial airing again the other day.
And again.
Jumps up and points at the screen. He's like, that's Mr. Chow's commercial.
Oh, I should send you guys all the photos right about now. I am in contact with the grandmother of the baby. Oh. I've been getting, you know, the baby has a October 31st birthday, just turned 2.
Okay.
That kid is going to be a stone cold stunner. 2 years old, he is drop dead gorgeous. He is like the Brad Pitt of babies right about now.
Can you give me the grandma's number so that I can draw on the baby?
No, actually the grandmother had nothing to do with it. It was the mom that was amazing. She coached the baby, had the baby take a nap before, during feeding. I mean, she was wonderful. She was like an amazing coach.
What did you use, Dave?
Pardon?
What kind of marker did you use?
There's special markers for drawing on, you know, they're washable markers.
On human skin?
Yes. And mind you, I think there's actually a disclaimer on it, and you guys being the chemists tell me, they say use it on skin older than for 9 months old and above.
Huh.
I mean, there's
little babies must have thinner skin.
I guess.
Probably more absorptive skin.
Yeah.
Or that, yeah.
So there you go. Dave Chow, International Pizza
South Marker.
Tattooing on baby.
Professor Beth Oljar is here with us today.
Hello.
Hello, hello. How about that commercial you were in?
What?
Actually, now that I think about it, they have to have at least one Detroit Mercy commercial that you're in. Isn't there one, Beth? Like back in the day?
I really hope not.
There was one Dave was in. Dave.
That's fine.
Kendra was in a few. Mm-hmm. I've seen those.
Even Matt and I were both in one.
We were on billboards, right?
We were on billboards. Yep. Matt and I were each on billboards.
As long as you guys aren't on milk cartons, I'm not going to worry. So
I won't even have a picture on the university's website.
Well, I'll put one up.
How about this one?
That'll work. Yeah, good. That's fine.
Actually, I found it interesting, Beth, because I was watching on election night during primetime, and they were running a ton of Detroit Mercy advertising. I mean, it was still kind of cool to see it there.
I've never seen you and Heather on billboard. I mean, I know the picture of Dave you're referring to. Mm-hmm. I've never seen you guys on billboards. That's
cool.
A
long time ago.
The old times. Yeah.
Beth, did you watch any of the returns primetime or later on election night?
Yeah, because MSNBC has great coverage and it's all women. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. A former Republican.
Steve Kornacki, who does all the figures.
And an African-American woman. It's totally awesome. And they're all brilliant.
Yeah, Joy is good.
I know. Isn't Joy Ann Reed great? Yeah. And Rachel Maddow's a Rhodes Scholar. She's got a doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I did. I've been watching fairly regularly in the evening.
I found it amazing how many commentators on there used to be Republicans.
It's true.
Well, like Nicole Wallace. Yeah, I mean, she was Bush's
community. Worked in the Bush White House.
And she has an MA in journalism from Northwestern, which is a pretty impressive credential. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, they've got a lot of MSNBC has a lot of diversity in the people who anchor their coverage, and I like that.
It's interesting. It's like you guys all watch it on television. I kind of did the opposite. I listened on NPR just because I didn't want to get inundated with all the graphics that night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was interesting.
We did.
Well, speaking of, tonight was kind of depressing for
Speaking of graphics, we were doing CNN, and as recently as very early this morning, we were watching CNN, which has been in perpetual mode, by the way, of listening to programming as Election Night in America.
Yes.
So I look at my wife, and I'm like, it's still 5 a.m. on Friday, right? Like, it's still Election Night in America. Professor Heather Hill is here with us today. Wait, you've changed your locale.
Yeah. My neighbor's R&D music was getting a little loud, so.
That's all right. As long as you weren't getting dive-bombed by a drone or something like that.
Yeah, so that's okay. Yay, the versatility and mobility of laptops.
That's right. So. Balanced on our laps. I'll tell you what, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmrc.edu. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker, asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. I promise, speaking of mercy, that I will let up the gas after today's episode, but we've got a few more. If you remember, we've left off in the GH corridor of the eponymous rules.
Waiting till we get to Occam's razor.
There we go. Can you verbalize Heisenberg's uncertainty principle?
Observation of a phenomenon changes it?
That's feeling a little more like Schrodinger's cat,
but
you're close.
All right. I got to fill in for Dan Maggio here. What, two things can't sit on the teleport pad at the same time or something like that, moving molecules? I mean, I gotta fill in for Dan on Star Trek geekiness here, that's all.
Well, you're pretty close, Dave. It's about
moving itself can't measure the motion of something else.
Right. So we cannot know both the position and the momentum of a subatomic particle. We can only know one or the other.
Right. Yeah.
I wasn't listening for that one, otherwise I could have totally gotten that.
If that's what it takes.
That's.
Oh, this is kind of
the honesty on that.
All kinds of social implications as well.
Mm-hmm. So how about Douglas Hofstadter is a very, very well-known science philosopher.
Eternal, like, golden braid.
Mm-hmm. What's Hofstadter's law? It always takes longer than you expect, even blank.
Sounds like some formula for cooking spaghetti at my house.
I actually don't know this.
This is good. You'll appreciate this, Beth. It always takes longer than you expect, even when you take into account Hofstadter's law. Now that's self-referential.
Oh, Hofstadter. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the major on Hogan's Heroes. Oh, okay. My bad. Oh,
well, that was Burkhalter.
No, there's the major.
Oh, the major. Oh, yeah. Major Hofstadter. Yes.
Wrong one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's right up there with all truths are subjective.
Right, right.
In terms of self-referential inconsistency.
Yeah, and then they're facts and then they're alternative facts too.
Mm-hmm. How about Kranzberg's law of technology? The law states technology is neither good nor bad, nor is it blank.
Cheap.
True.
Inherently evil or
moral?
You're on the right track.
Moral.
You're getting, actually, I feel like I have to give it to you, Heather. Kranzberg's law is technology is neither good nor bad, nor is it neutral, which is a great
sort of back and forth. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, Beth buys it. That's I feel that's a big
approval. There are some definitional questions there, but there's a sense in which that seems true to me.
They made fun of this, not by using the name, but indirectly on Futurama, as the doddering old professor is putting something away in his closet labeled death rays.
I love that show. That show is way too intelligent for television. I'm sorry.
There are some forms of technology where it takes a great deal of imagination to imagine a good or moral purpose for.
That's true.
What, you mean like program a VHS player back in the day?
Well, right, but the thing itself doesn't have purposes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Those are added, yes.
I'd like to know if our English professor has ever heard Lem's Law, L-E-M. It's about reading, Heather. Have you ever heard about Lem's Law?
No.
Uh-oh, we're doomed. Cynical.
Nobody reads is the short version of Lem's Law, because if someone does read, they don't blank.
Think?
Right?
Remember?
Drink?
You're all putting it together from different perspectives. Nobody reads. If someone does read, they don't understand. And if they do understand, they will immediately forget. That's Lem's Law.
That's pathetic.
Okay.
Wow, that's a fortune cookie and a half.
I said it was cynical.
Every educator wants to hear that.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, man.
Now,
oh, okay. Here's a good one.
On occasion, but nevertheless, no educator wants to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Helen Lewis is credited with having written the famous feminist scholar Lewis's Law. The comments on any article concerning feminism blank
are made by men.
Almost there, Beth. Almost there.
That was the root of my comment.
Are sexist, are misogynistic, are anti-feminist?
Or anti-feminist. Yeah.
Lewis's law is the comments on any article about feminism immediately justify feminism. Those are the rules.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like in The Abominable Bride, the Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes. The Abominable Bride is the episode that where the entire thing is kind of a metaphor for gender oppression. And at one point, Mycroft says, this is a war that we absolutely have to lose because we're in the wrong.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was cool.
You're listening to a special edition of Ask the Professor, in which all six of the professors participating in this recording session were connecting to each other from different locations, thanks to Zoom video conferencing technology. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's show, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
How about Occam's razor? I bet Beth can quote it immediately.
Don't multiply entities beyond necessity.
Yep, that's exactly.
It does not say that the simplest explanation is the true one. It doesn't.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's how people misunderstand it. Although arguably the principle about explanations could be a corollary of.
Yeah.
But if you don't need to posit the reality of something in order to explain a phenomenon, don't.
Mm-hmm.
We like slender, slim down metaphysics.
Please, shall we? I was certain that Beth was going to actually pronounce it. I actually have it here just to make you happy, Beth, in Latin. So, but you got it, of course, quoted exactly correct in England.
It drives me crazy when that gets, it's like when Sherlock Holmes claims he's doing deduction, it just makes me want to tear my hair out.
Well, I believe we've talked about this before, Beth, even though I've loved some of them, our last five presidents have all pronounced the word N-U-C-L-E-A-R, nuclear. And that.
That's pretty bad.
Why, that gets me good.
Why do that? I don't get it.
I have a friend whose pet peeve is height, pronounced heights, when people say height and depth.
I've heard height.
Yes.
Yes.
Irregardless.
My dad
irregardless,
says
irregardless, that's another good one, yes.
Irregardless is a real word.
It's true. Well,
it is now.
Yeah, it is
but
now.
It's, yeah. It's I don't
why
that.
Do you have a prefix and a suffix that just doesn't make any sense?
I know. I do.
Well, it's one of those words like to impact as a verb that just became a verb because people used it that way long enough.
Yeah, like with referencing. When did that become a verb? Mm-hmm. When did reference become a verb?
Well, that's the way language goes.
Yeah.
People just abuse language and then the abuses become the norm.
I looked down at Heather's pain and she's just like, yep, here we go.
Words are special and magic. We must respect and honor and take care of them.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's go back to behavioral science real quick. Papert's principle. Some of the most crucial steps in mental maturation are based not simply on acquiring new skills, but what?
Using them.
Yeah.
Applying them.
Putting them into practice.
Really, really close. Acquiring new administrative ways to use what you already know is what developmental psychology tells you.
Oh, yeah.
Kitty.
Got a kitty there.
Simplified ways of doing what you already know how to do.
Exactly. There we go.
What's feline's law?
Going by the front of the screen.
If I like
it. It's feeding time.
Yes. What does it say, Beth?
If I like it, I own it. It really is quite a stunning theory of property rights. Way outdoes John Locke. Fix your labor with something in order to own it.
Speaking of labor, Parkinson's law, not the Parkinson's disease person, but Parkinson's law, work expands to fill what?
Your waistline.
The need?
Not the waistline, not the need.
No.
The void?
Mara, we talk about this all the time when we joke that students are just like ideal gases.
They fill the space that's
noble?
Available to them.
Right, so work always expands to fill the time that you've given it.
Oh.
It's a corollary, someone will need to help me out here, of expenditure rises to meet income. There's so much about economics I don't understand and don't care to, frankly.
Well, so, it is the dismal science.
That is right.
Even according to economists, it's the dismal science.
I thought that you all would appreciate this one, even though it's a little bit wordy. Has anybody ever heard of Poe's law of fundamentalism? It's a corollary, I would say, of Turing's law or Turing's test, which states that the moment that someone blindfolded can't tell that they're communicating with a computer, that we would actually have some sort of AI sentience, basically. Poe's Law, I'm just going to come out and say it because it's hopefully going to make you all laugh. Without some sort of emoji or blatant display of humor, it is utterly impossible to parody a creationist in such a way that someone won't mistake it for the genuine article.
Sounds about right.
Wow.
Oh, man. Unbelievable.
I mean, there's a museum where they have dinosaurs with saddles on them because we rode them.
No.
I know. Well, most of us saw the Flintstones and didn't buy it, but apparently there are people who actually believe that that happened.
Yes, and they tamed.
That'd be pretty sweet.
How about one that I bet you could figure out here? Siegel's Law states, a man with a watch knows what time it is. A man with two watches.
That's a broken watch.
Knows what time it isn't.
Works at Shinola.
I missed Beth's, and I think that she hit it on the head. What did you say, Beth?
Always knows what time it is?
Actually, it's the opposite. Never knows what time it is because they can't be sure. Yeah. Okay. Tobler's first law of geography. Everything is related to everything else, but near things, blank.
Are more related.
That's right. Are more related than distant things. That's exactly right. Yep. Is actually a wonderful treatise that Professor Prasad Venugopal, who we haven't seen once this semester, his science, technology, and race class to describe, frankly, that the use of words is essentially a 100% regional activity. And the only thing that matters is that people were close to each other, which changes in the information age, etc. Very interesting. Just a couple more of these. I hope you've had fun, professors. Weyo's Laws, W-I-I-O, Weyo's Law. This is extremely short and extremely cynical. Communication nearly always fails, except...
on really good Wi-Fi.
When it's a lie?
No, think cynical.
Except when it doesn't.
You know, Mara, it's communication nearly always fails, except by accident. That's the rule.
Wow.
These people must have been living in 2020 during a pandemic.
I couldn't help myself because, of course, we're reaching the end of the alphabet here. In organic chemistry, these rules predict the stereochemistry of pericyclic reactions based on orbital symmetry. Come on, Mara.
Zaitsev or Zaitsev?
Oh. Save us.
Orbital symmetry?
Orbital symmetry of pericyclic reactions? Anybody? Anybody?
Oh. What?
Actually, I can give it away by saying the main tributary in Detroit, Michigan is what? Main road tributary.
Woodward?
Woodward. It's the Woodward-Hoffman rules is what we call them.
No luck.
That's all right.
We all had that blank look about us. I'm so sorry.
All right. I'd say that the profs did really, really well. I didn't set any sort of bar to these questions or anything, but we had fun, even though sometimes it was cynical fun. That's just the way it's got to be. So let's go to our list before we wrap up here of ATP favorites. Oh, okay. Tell us a story or direct reference, a practical joke that you were part of or heard about that you really thought was funny.
Do we have plausible deniability?
Sure. This happened to a friend of yours, Dave.
Yes. Okay. Does putting, you know, beef bouillon cubes inside shower heads at Michigan State count?
That's
really good.
It has to be simple to be a good practical joke, and that is awesome.
In bouillon.
Oh, that'd be a tasty shower.
It was discreet. And I was long, I mean, the perpetrator's long gone on I-96 by the time it was discovered. So
the only thing is, did you ever hear anything about fallout? Anything?
No. I did not. I didn't want, you know, mind you, supposedly the perpetrator didn't hear a thing, so
That's awesome. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Now I did have a horrible one pulled on me, though. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you know those Hostess fruit pies?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so I was working, this is when I was in school, I was working at a silkscreen shop. One of the gals said, hey, I'm going to the store. Do you want to split a Hostess fruit pie with me? So I said, sure. So, you know, she goes to the store, comes back and gives me, literally cuts it right in half. Okay, Dave, here's your half of the Hostess fruit pie. She took out the apple filling, put in spinach dip, and then repacked just the apples. So you bite into it, and it's spinach dip, which is white and green and kind of slimy. And then all of a sudden, like, I was hauling tail toward the alleyway to spit it all out. Spinach dip.
Okay, so you've got your comeuppance is what we're hearing.
Oh, yeah, I can dish it out as well as take it too, so.
Oh, man, we need to recover from that showerhead incident. Does anybody have anything else to add?
Oh, great. Why do I get the feeling I just, like, started a new trend at UDM's dorms?
I had a friend who went to a college that had a huge, beautiful fountain out on the front lawn, and they would always pour Tide or some kind of detergent into the bleach every year at around finals time so that the whole thing would turn into huge bubbles everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The DIA and dry ice is always good, too.
Yeah. The only time, and this is just talking about a practical joke that I did not take part in, the only time I got called into essentially the dean of students' office as one of the editors for the school newspaper in college at Detroit Mercy.
Supposedly.
Someone else had dumped a very large amount of Kool-Aid into the fountain. Okay. And they did it during the night. So the next morning when you came in, you could imagine what it looked like. So for that week's issue of the Varsity News, we implanted in almost every news story, something along the lines of, and when the fountain runs red with blood, this will happen. And I got hauled in. It's like, you know, that was really bad taste, Matt. I'm like, I didn't do the thing. I'm just
you're just reporting on it, right?
I don't make the news.
Yeah.
I just report the news.
Darn right. Matt, you got serious plausible deniability.
Oh my gosh. I can't let an opportunity like this go by without mentioning that about 6 years ago, some of Mark Benvenuto's students took the plastic shell around one of his handheld X-ray spectrophotometers and took the instrument, the $55,000 instrument, out of it and then dropped it down the stairs in front of him at the top all the way down the empty case. And considering he's the practical jokester of the century, he lost it. They were taking video and they had to turn it off because his swearing was so profound. You can give it, Mark, but you can't take it because that was brilliant. Just absolutely brilliant. Professors, I'm afraid the time has come to say goodbye. Beth.
Goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
Mara.
Goodbye.
Jim.
Goodbye.
And Heather.
Bye-bye.
Now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. We're produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Till next time, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.